One of the world's foremost spiritual channelers back with us, Paul Selig. His latest book is called Beyond the Known, Realization. I believe it comes out in August of this year. We'll check in with Paul on that, and we'll be chatting with him about the other side. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Paul Selig, considered to be one of the foremost spiritual channels working today. A spiritual experience back in 1987 left him as a clairvoyant. Well, let me explain that. And as a way to gain a context for what he was beginning to experience, he studied a form of energy healing and began to hear from his clients. Described as a medium for the living, Paul has the unique ability to step into and become people his clients ask about. His voice actually changes, don't get scared, often taking on their personalities as he hears them telepathically. Paul, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. And the book, Beyond the Known, Realization, comes out in August, right?
August 6th, it does.
Perfect. We got to get you back for that, too, all right?
Thank you. Yeah.
But Amazon, I just noticed tonight, it's taking pre-orders already.
It is.
Well, that's excellent. How have you been?
I've been well, thank you.
What's new?
Well, my guides dictated yet another book since we last spoke, I think. All the books are dictated now before audiences and then transcribed, and the unedited versions are the things people read.
Yeah, we talked about the Book of Truth, the Book of Freedom, and now Beyond the Known, Realization.
Uh-huh.
Now this one, tell us a little bit about this one, because this one is different than the other ones.
Well, this is the seventh book the guides have dictated, and they've really been setting out a course, which I didn't realize when they started, about realizing and embodying what they call the true self or the divine self. And in this book, what they seem to be doing is kind of punching a hole through the ceiling of what our agreed upon reality has been, so that we can begin to align and live and express in, I'm going to use the word reality for lack of a better word, beyond what we've known was possible. So they call it the upper room, which is where they take us in this book. But Beyond the Known really is about shifting beyond the known of the collective reality that we've inherited and we've been empowering all our lives, because it's what we've been taught to expect to be there.
Paul, tell us about this 1987 experience. What happened to you?
Well, you know, I was 25 years old. I was a year out of Yale. I'd been in graduate school. I'd had a list of things that I had to do in the world that I thought would make me okay. I got the whole list. I wasn't okay. I began to look for something really out of sheer necessity, not because I thought it would be nice to be spiritual. I'd been raised an atheist. But I went up to the roof of this building that I lived in on the night before this event people were calling the harmonic convergence. It was some alignment, and I heard people were going to be waking up, and I thought, in my innocence, well, if there is a God or a something, whatever you want to call it out there, and you ask to be woken up, why would it want to say no? And I went up to the roof, and I had a crystal and a mantra. I thought you needed those things to wake up the props. And I asked, and I ended up having an experience of energy moving through my body, you know, up, begin at the base of my spine, pit of my being, and then up through the top of my head, that left me kind of paralyzed on this roof. And I began seeing little lights around people after that, which was the beginning of an opening that has, you know, continued on today. People later said it sounded like a spontaneous kundalini awakening. For all I know, I was hyperventilating. I just know that I could feel it. And for somebody like me who'd been raised with nothing, having something that was tangible was very important. And the work that I do and the guides I work with do is very tangible for people as well. People can feel the energy, and that's something that I'm grateful for.
When you get into the mode that you will be in a little bit later on tonight, do you do that by design, or does it just happen?
I recede. I mean, it depends on what level of depth I'm going into. When my guides are teaching, when they're dictating a book, when they're doing a workshop, I'm literally sort of climbing into the back seat of a car in my mind and turning the wheel over to the guide. So my consciousness is present, but it's receded. When I'm reading people, which is when I step into people and see what I can hear, I'm kind of like this human switchboard. I'm sharing the front seat. I can go back and forth. It's not quite as reseated. But there's not a large process getting in at this point for me. It's really the equivalent of turning a dial on the radio. And the depth of the dial really is the depth in which I've been able to sort of step out of the way to allow the transmission or the broadcast to come through.
Now, with the latest book, your guides speak about this upper room. Tell us what this room is exactly.
Well, I'm trying to understand it myself, and I'll do my best to explain
okay,
it. They may
please.
Come through if I can't do it, because that's often what happens. But they say that we're all existing in a shared octave. They use the word octave. They don't really say dimension, but a shared octave of experience that has highs and lows. And they say that every song, everything that we see, every experience we can have actually can exist in multiple octaves. And if you think about it, like, you know, any song played in another key or another octave, they say this can go on into infinity. The note C exists into infinity, just not on the keyboard that we're used to seeing. So the upper room, they say, is the higher octave. And what they're doing by bringing us there is really transposing our level of vibration, for lack of a better word, the tone that we emit, to play at a higher, in a higher frequency. And when we do that, we're actually lifting what we encounter to what they call the upper room by nature of being, or co-resonance. The guides talk about the kingdom, and they say that the kingdom is the awareness of the divine in all manifestation. You can't exclude anything. And from the upper room, you can begin to have that perception of it.
Is the upper room considered heaven?
No, I don't think it is. I think our idea of heaven, at least, is where you go when you die and, you know, whatever happens there. The upper room really does seem to be the presence of the divine in everything. So our idea of heaven, I think, for the most part, or my idea of heaven, was always, you know, there's angels flying around, everything's lovely. This is the awareness of the inherent divine, the source of all things, which the guides say is articulated in what we see. The guides say there's only one note playing in the whole universe, one tone, and that tone expresses in infinite ways. So it's the ability to look at what you see and know it as of source, of that level of consciousness. So I suppose that's a heaven. I understand the definition that they give, which again is the kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
And they've said from the beginning, you know, that's the awareness of the divine in everything. And the hard part is they say you can't exclude anything. They say what you put in darkness calls you to the darkness, and that becomes the level of vibration or co-resonance that you operate in. So this is a teaching of lifting the world to what they call the upper room.
Do you have to be dead to get to the upper room?
No, and that's the interesting thing about all of this. You see, they say it can happen in body. And I believed, if I believed anything, that if there was a God, there was some heaven, and, you know, it was up there, and we're stuck here in the mud. So if there is a God, it's up in the clouds, we're stuck in the mud. The guides say, you know, God is up there, and it's also here. God is the mud as well, and it's also your blood and your skin and everything you see. And the belief in separation is what we've been caught in. And as we're caught in that belief that we're separate from our source, we continue to operate in fear. So you don't have to be dead, but you do have to be willing to let go of an idea of who you are, which is an idea of one as separate from one source.
Once you're in the room, what do you do there? What happens?
Well, it's interesting. You know, the guides work with these attunements, and I can get into that later, but an attunement really is like the coordinates in some ways for the radio that you are to be in broadcast in a higher way. When the broadcast is shifted, your field, the energetic field you hold, is operating in a higher way. Now, until you know who you were, guys, this is one of the attunements. I know who I am in truth. I know what I am in truth. I know how I serve in truth. I am free, I am free, I am free. Each of those claims, the guides say, are always true at the level of what they call the true source or the God within. The God within knows who and what it is and how it serves, and of course it's free, because how could it not be? So each of those things are like notes on a piano. When those individual notes are played at once in a realized way, the guides say you really do align at a higher level, and the broadcast that you hold then in interaction with what you encounter lifts what you see to the upper room by nature of being. You become in some ways a gateway or a doorway between the octaves. You're able to support others in lifting as well. Until that time, the lifting of what you see happens through choice, the choice to re-see what you've been taught and see it in a higher way, because you can't lift anything to the upper room that you're fearful of and judgment of or damning.
Can anybody get to the upper room, Paul?
Yeah, according to the guides, yes, but you have to be willing. Now, the level of embodiment may vary. I think people come and are born to learn. We come here to have this experience in this collective field that we've chosen to learn through. So the guides say you can learn through fear, and we can all continue to learn through fear until we blow ourselves up, if that's what we want to do, or we can learn in a higher way. The lessons will be there regardless. But this is available to everyone. Not worthy of it, that we're not allowed this, that this is, you know, the work of the saint, you know, or the mystic alone, I think needs to be re-understood, because that's one of the things that keeps us with this false barrier on the ceiling that we've all been believing is there, that we're not allowed to claim our inherent divinity, which is the basis of the entire teaching.
What about the criminals and lowlifes? They're not going to get up there, are they?
Well, are they going to get up there? They can be realized there. So if we go back to this simple idea of what you damn damns you back, you know, and what you bless blesses you, that's really a teaching of co-resonance. That's not about, you can't make anything holy, my guides say. Everything's already holy, but you can realize the inherent divinity in anything, and that's a choice. So if I'm deciding who somebody is and deciding that they're unworthy of God, for lack of a better word, or an awareness of their own worth, then I've put them outside the light. What you put outside the light, they say, calls you right to it. They say, you can't be the light and hold another in darkness. So the job then is to realize the one that you can't stand, that you would judge, that you would be fearful of. And actually, the guides say that you do this by, in some ways, releasing the ideas of who they are and the language attached to them. It's almost like deconstructing something. If you take off the mask and the names and the judgments, what do you have left, which is the inherent divine? That's what's lifted. And when I do these workshops, and I do them all over the world, the guides work with people to lift other people. And you can actually feel it. You can literally feel the energy field that you hold lifting with you, and you can actually lift the whole room. It's quite something to feel.
Paul, if there's an upper room, is there a lower room?
Well, I think we're in it, and yes, I think there is. Just like you can play anything in a higher octave, any piece of music, I think that there are probably lower octaves as well. That's not what the guides are teaching. But we're operating right now in a shared idea of reality. We all know what the sky is, what the ocean is, what it means to be perhaps a man or a woman. We know what a war is. We know all this stuff. And we're all operating in an expectation of what we've had to always be there. So the idea is that the small self, or the personality self, which we all have, always knows itself through history. It expects to see what he or she has been told should be there, and we keep replicating our problems this way. When you go to the upper, you're actually moving beyond that language. I don't know what's lower than we are right now. It seems that we can be pretty low when I look around at the world. But again, that's what we're choosing. You know, we're really choosing to be operating this way. So the guides don't talk about hell, but they talk a lot about heresy. And heresy, they say, is the denial of the divine that's in all things. They say humanity's only problem, truthfully, is the denial of what they call God. And they say God is the source of all things, and that there really is one source expressing itself in all ways. And we deny ourselves that we're of that, and consequently we deny everybody else, and that's the unfortunate position we hold of operating in separation.
Paul, when you talk about your guides, who are they? What are they?
Well, the name that they come through, when they come through with a name, is the name Melchizedek, and that's an old name.
That is an old name, yeah.
It's in the Bible. I'm not a religious scholar. There are actually scholars that have studied the work that comes through me, and they're placing it in a context of Gnosticism, some of them are saying, Hermeticism, mm-hmm. some are saying, and both of those things are things I really haven't studied. But Melchizedek, I understand, is a priesthood. It's an order, and it's, you know, goes back to, it's in the New Testament, I think it's in the Old Testament, I really don't know. I call them the guides because my ex, years ago, and my ex found out that I could do this thing, used to say, ask the guides this, ask the guides that, and that's how they became known as the guides.
Did they find you, or did you find them, the guides?
That's a really interesting question. I am told by them that this is a relationship that I agreed to prior to incarnation, that I am of them at a certain level in such a way that I can serve as a conduit. They say in the book that they just finished dictating a few weeks ago that I perceive myself as more separate from them than I actually am. I had an experience when I was about 5 years old. It was my only out-of-body experience in my life, that I was hovering over my bed watching myself have this conversation with what I believed to be an angel, or at least I told my mother that that's what it was, that was hovering over the bed and speaking to me. And when I go back to that, I actually always think that I was sort of being told, guess what, it's not going to be easy, but there may be something ahead of you. My feeling, Paul, the guy that was a college teacher, you know, for 25 years, I was a reluctant psychic. I was reluctant to come out of the closet with this stuff until the book started coming through me, feels that he chose it at a certain level. I had a couple of big experiences in my late 20s, early 30s, where I was given a real experience of something more and of unity. And once you have that, it's very, very hard to pretend that you didn't. And that kept me going forward. And I asked at a certain point, and I remember asking, if there's a way to go all the way with this, I would like to. I don't even know if I knew what I was asking, but it feels that what they brought through in this series of books is a way for those who want to go all the way. And that's the teaching. I'm not the best student of it because I'm so often just sitting there and taking the dictation.
Paul, in the years I've talked with you, I've never heard you talk about evil or the devil. You don't seem to bring that up. How come?
Because it's not what they teach. They talk a lot about fear, and they do talk about the action of fear, and they say that the action of fear is to claim more fear. And they say, look at every choice you've ever made because you were afraid, and see what it got you, and you'll see that you got more fear. They do say, don't listen to fear, it's a trickster. You know, I mean, we can be taught by fear. You can learn not to, you know, put your hand, you know, in the flame, you know, and get burnt. I mean, you can use it as a teacher, but there are other ways to learn. When they talk about fear, I sometimes think that there's an equivalency there to what people call evil or, you know, the devil, but they don't use that language at all. But they do say that, you know, God or whatever God is all things. And my question for them was, well, what about fear? Is fear of God, you know? And they say, actually it is, but it doesn't know that it is. And that's the problem. So fear's job is to replicate this belief that it is separate. And that's the trouble that we're in right now. If you look at the world, we're denying the inherent divinity in everyone that isn't like us or disagrees with us, and we replicate this again and again. And the outcome of that seems to be, you know, big trouble, you
know,
for all of us if we don't intend to it.
Paul, we're going to take a break, but we're going to come back and talk more with Paul Selig. Next hour, we'll take phone calls with him on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Paul Selig. Paul's website is his name, PaulSelig.com, linked up at CoastToCoastAM.com. And Paul, the spirit guides, were they once living humans before they joined the other side?
What they've said is some of them have been, some of them have not. They say some of us have known ourselves in form, some of us have not. So I think it's a mixed bag. It's not like I'm channeling, you know, my dead Uncle Ralph. You know, these are teachers, and they're, mm-hmm. they're not the departed. I think we're working at a higher level than, you know, the level there. People think of as the astral plane. You know, they call me a medium for the living. I can hear people that are alive, and I can hear my guides, which is way up there. But I usually don't tune in well to those who've crossed or on what we think of as the other side.
Do they know our future? Can they predict it? Do they see it?
They speak to our possibilities. I have never heard them say the world is going to end. I have heard them say that if we don't get our act together, we're in for a very, very hard time. In the very first book, which was channeled in 2009, was called I Am the Word, they said humanity is at a time of reckoning. And they said a reckoning is a facing of oneself, you know, and all of one's creations, and that everything that's been created in fear needs to be recreated in a higher way. Now, and they're stressing this and continuing with this, but what they said a couple of years ago is that everything that's been buried is now coming to the surface, and that's the time that we're in. This was in the Book of Truth. They say in truth, a lie cannot be held, and the energy of truth is present. But they say it's like living in an excavation site. If your backyard was being excavated with the things that were buried 2 weeks ago and 5,000 years ago, everything is coming up and it's a mess. But they say it's coming up so that it can be re-known, re-seen. You really can't heal what you're hiding in shadow. And this is the time we seem to be standing in now.
Paul, did the guides ever give you misinformation or lead you astray or give you wrong information?
You know, I'm not the best person to be reading for myself. If I have an investment in a personal situation or outcome, I'm not necessarily the clearest channel. So I don't read for myself. What the guides are very good doing with me is helping me in the moment with choices that I might need to make. And primarily what they care about is that I'm not acting in fear. In terms of the dictation in the books, you know, not that I know of at this point, really. There are now 8 books that have been, because the 8th isn't out till next summer. There are 8 books that have been spoken aloud and transcribed, and the unedited transcripts are the books. So they're enormously careful and consistent about how they lay out their teachings. And now the last 2 or 3 books were done entirely in front of audiences. So they're accurate, and they take questions from people about, you know, their lives and about their spiritual development, and I'm told they're quite accurate there as well. As a psychic, as Paul, who's interpreting, you know, I don't know if I'm always at 100%, but I'm good enough that people tend to come back to talk with me. When I work psychically, I'm not necessarily working with the guides. They're teachers. I'm the one that's doing the psychic work. They come through to explain.
Have you found them to be pleasant in their dealings with other people?
More so than I am.
You know, oh, you're fine.
Curmudgeon.
Nah.
I try with this work. I'm not a spiritual teacher. I'm not a guru. I have no desire to be either of those things. They're better teachers than I am. And when I taught college, I was a good teacher, and I respect what they do through me. They operate with real love and a real compassion for who we are and what we choose to learn through. We can choose to learn through anything. They're not going to love us any less. That I really do believe. And if I want to learn through walking into traffic, they're not going to stop me. If I want to say, is this a good time to cross the street, they may well say, not wise. But they give us and respect us our free will. That's ours. That's inherent to who we are. But they really do support us in moving beyond our ideas of who we are, which they say is the small self that we've mistaken ourselves to be from sort of the wonderful expression of the divine that in fact we all truly are.
Paul, if something was going to happen, an asteroid was going to hit the planet, or war would break out with Iran or something horrible, would they notify you?
I don't know, truthfully. I've gotten predictive work before about world events, but through the back door. So years ago, and I don't usually tell this story, but years ago, my ex was planning on opening up a business in Lower Manhattan and wanted to know if they were going to be able to make the rent on the business for the month of October. And the guide said no. And the big question was why, and the answer was, well, there's going to be a terrorist attack in Lower Manhattan. And indeed there was, and the rent wasn't made. I would not have gotten that information except through the back door. And at the time, I didn't believe it because I wasn't used to getting things like that. I was very specific, but I didn't trust it. My work doesn't seem to be to do that world stuff. The guides come in and they talk about our choices and our free will and our opportunities. And I do hope that if there was something that was happening that we really did need to know about, they would bring it through. And if not me, through somebody else who perhaps is more adept at working at that level of prediction. The guides have never spoken to me about a world leader. They'll talk about where we're at as a country. They'll talk about the choices that we have. But they don't name names, and they don't root their teachings in popular culture. And I don't know if that's because they're not that interested in it. I mean, they still call my computer, a television. You know, I mean, their language is not always of the moment, and that's fine with me. But I do believe that they really have our backs, and they're trying to teach us right now, for those who will listen, ways that we can move beyond a possible future that isn't necessarily going to give us what we say we want. The guides say we can learn through anything, including, blowing ourselves up. But I don't hear from them that that's what's going to happen.
Paul, when we take calls next hour, questions for you, obviously, but do you do personal readings, or how do you want to handle the calls?
Well, if there's questions for the guides, I mean, they may come through and take them. And I should say that when I channel, I whisper the words as they come and repeat. So it's a little weird to hear.
Yes.
Personal questions, what I don't do is medical readings, and I don't contact people's dead relatives.
Okay.
But I can tell somebody if they're having problems with their teenager and they're willing to give me the teenager's name, I can step in, or the boss, or the estranged partner. I'm like a human switchboard. So when I'm plugged into the guides, I'm taking dictation from them. And when I'm tuning into somebody who has a question for me, I'm tuning into an aspect of them and or the people that they ask about.
Do the guides ever tell you, those that may have been humans whose souls have passed on, who they were in their human life, or they were?
In their past life work?
Yes.
Talk about that. No, I mean, I've gotten some stuff from myself, which hasn't been all that comfortable. I seem to have been doing some of this kind of work for
a long time,
quite some time. And some of those, images that have come up aren't all that pleasant. There was a fair amount of persecution for people who were doing this kind of work. I don't stay there. I don't attach to it. And I don't do a lot of past life work. Once in a while in a session, it'll come up and they'll address it. But for the most part, I believe that if you've got something hanging out from the past, it's going to find a way to show up in the present now to be addressed. And that's where we are better off staying.
This is remarkable, though, isn't it? How it works and unfolds. It's fantastic.
I continue to do it because I don't understand it, and I'm interested in it, and I'm still learning through it. And the teachings themselves are sound. I mean, it's very hard to argue with the morality of what they're speaking about. And there's a tremendous respect for all of us and where we're at, whether we choose to to grow spiritually and to waken up to our true divine nature, as they say it, or we don't, because you're going to learn anyway. You know, they say, you know, you can learn to, you know, make an omelet in the gutter or in a fine kitchen. You're still going to learn. And that's really what we're here for. And they're just here to teach.
Would you consider yourself, Paul, also psychic, in addition to being a spiritual channeler?
Yeah, I'm a clairaudient. That's my primary ability, is hearing, and the stepping in to people that I do is clairsentience. I don't do a lot of predictive work, so people call me and they say, well, tell me who I'm going to meet.
Right, or my job.
I may get some of that stuff, but what I'm more effective at doing is telling them why they can't keep the jobs that they're getting, or why the relationships don't last, and what the pattern is that might be able to be shifted through this work if they're willing to let go of something. So, I don't like the term psychic. It's a perfectly good word. Mm-hmm. But because I didn't grow up thinking of myself that way, I mean, I was a late bloomer. I started to open up in my mid-20s. I started to hear in my early 30s on a regular basis when I was working with other people. And then I began channeling after that. But the way that I work now with the lectures that come through me again and again and again, that didn't really emerge until about 2008. And I was in my 40s. I'm 57 now. And they're still developing me through this work. And there's sort of no way around that.
Would you say this gift is God-given?
I hope so. You know, I count on it that way. I don't know how it could not be. They're not teaching fear. And, you know, they say, again, the action of fear is to claim more fear. And if anybody's teaching you and telling you to be afraid, that's more than likely a low-level teaching, because fear tends to be about control. They know who they are, and they, in fact, say, you know, they are who we become once we know who we are and get over this idea of who we are in such a limited way. So they're the first ones to say that God is all things. But when they say God is all things, they mean all things. You can't exclude anything or anyone from that equation, because to deny anybody God, or whatever you want to call God, is to deny it in yourself. And these aren't new teachings. I mean, if you go into the New Testament, it's there. If you go into any world religion, it's there. The guides say truth is truth. What is true is always true. And we tend to get caught up in the overlays of religion, the politics, and what's happened with true teachings over a millennium when they've become, you know, perhaps distorted or misused or institutionalized. But the essence of truth, they say, is present in all of them. And that's what I think they're trying to bring us back to.
When the guides are dealing through you, do they ever get to the point where it's too much? You know, Edgar Cayce, for example, I think it wore him down, where he got sick because of this. Do you ever get to that point where it's too much?
I don't know about what happened to Cayce, and people actually have written me because I work a lot. They've delivered, 8 books in 9 years?
That's a lot. That's intense.
And I'm traveling, you know, half the month with this work. It's hard on me. It's hard on my nervous system. I don't take, and some of this is my fault, I could take better care of myself than I do. And I am aware of the physical changes mm-hmm. that I go through as a result of this work. When I'm channeling, and I've never seen it, but it's been said hundreds and hundreds of times now, my eyes turn bright blue. I have hazel eyes. I have dark eyes.
Oh, my gosh.
And when I'm channeling, people think I have blue eyes.
Are you exhausted after you channel?
I can be. It depends. If there's a lot of resistance in the room, it's like showing up and having pushback. But because people now who are coming to see me work already have a sense of what I'm doing, I'm not sitting there, you know, facing judgment in the ways that perhaps I did when I first started. I'm not the most graceful channel. I do this weird whisper and repeat thing. You know, I'm not wearing white. I complain all the time about my life. You know, I'm really who I am. You know, I don't pretend to be more ascended than I am. I have an odd ability. I don't consider myself special. And I think that that's a trap people can get into with this stuff. I mean, if I was 7 feet tall, I'd probably be playing, basketball. I have this ability that seems to support other people in developing their own. If somebody like me is capable at this level, that means it's available. And if it's available, it can be claimed and chosen. I do believe that.
Are you glad at this point that you have this ability?
Well, you know, I don't think I'm ever going to get another job teaching college again. There's all these videos of me on YouTube looking quite crazy, whispering and repeating as I channel. I am grateful for this. I'm fascinated by it. If you told me 20 years ago that this is what my life would have become, I think I wouldn't have believed you.
No, if I had said, Paul, you're going to be on a national radio show talking about your spirit guides and everything else, you'd probably say, George, you're nuts.
Yeah, I would have, And I liked my life in academia. I was a good college teacher. I ran a graduate program. I'm on the board of a college still. I still keep my foot in the door there. And I'm grateful that I do. But this was unexpected in some ways. And when I look back on it, it also makes strange, perfect sense.
It sure does. Paul, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back and take calls. Final hour just ahead on Coast to Coast AM.